Hello, Jessica.
Hey, Andy.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good. Thanks.
So normally Eugene is the host of this show, and then for the past few weeks, Josh has been covering him, and then now I'm covering her, covering him. Oh, yeah? You listened before?
Yeah, I've listened in. I tuned in a couple weeks ago, you and Dasha.
What did you hear?
Some conspiracy theories, some ramblings.
Right, right. Anything that sounded actually rational?
Yeah.
That's good.
I think we were talking. I think it was right after Las Vegas happened.
Vegas, Mandalay Bay.
It led me down a rabbit hole of looking into some of the more pressing conspiracy theories.
Yeah. Well, none of those conspiracy theories has really faded. Actually, I feel like people are more interested in conspiracy theories with this whole thing now because they have more information. You know? I think the whole thing actually, because the way the police handled it, and because there was like all these weird things, like the security guard who was shot. Not like I'm going to go down this whole rabbit hole again, but yeah. The security guard was shot, and then he disappeared, and then the timeline changed. I don't know. Whatever.
Right. The woman, the raving, screaming woman.
The screaming, raving woman. Yeah.
You're all going to die.
You're all going to die tonight.
Did they ever find her? Did they ever find the guard?
No, they found the guard, but then he disappeared for a day.
Right.
So then he mysteriously showed up on Ellen.
Right, right.
He was found. He was found in a dumpster behind the Ellen show.
He was hijacked by Ellen's security.
Right. Now, Jessica, you are a painter, am I right?
Yeah, you've heard. You've heard, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Now you just had a show at the Sade Gallery, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was the thing on Saturday? I heard you guys had a little like concert. Was it a closing thing?
It wasn't a closing, but we did have an event. We had three bands play. It was really fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a really great experience over there.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah? Well, how are the bands? Do you like these bands? You can be honest.
You know what? It was my first time hearing the Pesos, and so it was a solo act of the singer from the Pesos named Jan, and he's called Cherry Pumps.
Okay.
I think he lives in Orange County. It's really like surf pop. Very cool.
He looked like
great in front of
him. Yeah.
He was just like framed right in the middle of my paintings.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Then there was the homie who was very funny. It kind of reminded me of, I don't know.
Weird Al Yankovic or something like that?
It was a little bit, he was a little bit like fun and a little parody.
Yes.
But high romance, I would say.
Yeah.
And then Holy Shit played. I'd seen them a couple nights before at Zebulon. So I was very nervous about the amount of people that were going to show up.
Right.
Zebulon. They had a sold out. They had a big, big fun show.
Huh. Now, as an artist, are you thinking about these big ideas like posterity and sort of how like your career will look at the end of your life? Do you consider these things at all?
I mean, I can think as far as the week, like the end of the week in general. But there is something nice about knowing that I can't imagine beyond a certain time in the future, but I know that my paintings can.
You're not meticulously constructing your body of work.
Trajectory.
Yeah.
Right. Like as if. If I could go forward and then like, no, I'd have to be able to sort of make leaps that I can't, I think.
Well, yeah, sure. Right.
Although the thing about like, I do think that there's a part of wanting to make paintings that I think on an unconscious level, like, I know that they're going to be around much longer than me. So that,
yeah, well, isn't that the idea? Isn't that the part of the appeal?
It
being
is.
An artist, because as you know, as we're living in like a more secular time where we believe less and less in like eternity, so this idea of leaving something that's lasting, and some people do this with maybe children, some people do this with accumulating wealth, so they have property, and some people do this maybe with like something like art or music or,
right,
you know,
which I think puts you in like a strange position of like of your life, because you're pouring all of that. Into like all of the work that you would be doing otherwise,
right,
building these otherwise more like, you know, things become castles.
Sure.
It's like thrown into the work, so.
Okay. Well, now, do you ever think about the lasting effects of paint, how it affects your body?
Well, yeah, I started wearing gloves, and
do you think these gloves do anything?
I
Cause
do.
Because you get paint on your arms, you get paint on your legs. Now, doesn't this also just do the exact same thing?
Well, I used to not wear gloves at all for many years, and was really like chided and treated like a rotten child or something.
Right. Well, I mean,
people were just like,
well, some of these artists they used to have all their coffee cups were covered in paint, you know.
Sure.
But then they all killed themselves. So.
Okay. Yeah. I mean.
My mother attributes a lot of her mental illness to the fumes. Yeah.
Really. To resins.
Yeah. Well.
Is she a sculptor?
One with mental illness is not very good at diagnosing the causes.
Okay.
Of themselves, you know.
But that's what she believes.
That's what she believes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, she also says fumes. Actually, the worst stuff is actually the solvents. You know, turpentine.
Yeah.
Those things.
Well, you know, you're a painter as well.
Well, I don't use any turpentine or anything like that.
Right. And is this okay? So now we're getting to the bottom of that.
We're getting to the bottom of this. Yeah. Yeah.
The big reveal.
Yeah. Now I also saw you post something on. This is probably a little plug for you, but I saw you post something on Instagram today. It was, you show your work at something called availableworks.net, am I right?
Oh, availableworks.net.
Now, what's the deal with this? Now, yes. I went on there, and there's a handful of people in there. I know a couple of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is, what is this? This is like artsy or something?
You know, it's a new, I guess, a friend of mine, Asher Penn, started it, and it's apparently a social media platform. So you sign up, you become a member, and then you can kind of follow all, you know, different accounts and share. So it's a
social media
platform
plus
artsy.
Right.
And then also you don't have to pay. I mean, it's like $5 a month, so it's something really nominal.
Okay.
And they don't take any of the percentage.
Now, let's say I were to buy one of your works on there, okay, one of your available works. Now, what would the package look like that I get in the mail? Am I getting a handwritten note? Am I getting a frame on there?
Can I ask, like, would that be something? It would be like a bit unexpected, right?
It would be totally unexpected. But at the same time, it'd be slightly, you know, you'd wish for it. You'd hope for it.
Yeah. I think that's really nice about it, though. Like, this kind of, like, the scale is really intimate. I put up four drawings to start.
Yeah.
And I was actually thinking about how I would like to send them. So I'll think about, like, a handwritten note. Or maybe, like, perfume or something like that, you know? Like, the way you have to, like,
Or maybe you should spray a little of your, you know, like the perfume you wear every day into the box, okay. So it arrives with a little bit of your scent.
Wow.
It has Jessica Williams like aura inside of it. Would you like that? You know, and then it has like a couple flower petals.
Can from you say aura one more time?
Aura.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now tonight, I'm looking behind you, coming down that hill. Our car is coming from Dodger Stadium. You know.
Yeah.
And I remember going with you to a Dodgers game this past season, go down as the greatest season in Dodgers history.
That's,
you know?
Yeah. What? So you know all about the stats and all that. So what's, now they're in the World Series.
Well,
this is since when?
They're pretty darn good. This is game one.
Okay.
But
no, I know that, but what was the last, you know, World Series?
The last World Series was 1988.
Okay, so that's a good, like, over, what, like 20? 29 years.
Yeah, exactly. Or was it 86? Or is that maybe those the Royals? Okay, never mind. But now, your family's a big Dodgers fan, too.
Yeah, my dad is a lifelong Dodgers fan. I think he's gone to almost every home game since he was, like, about 7 years old. And actually, the guy who passes out, you know, the Cracker Jacks. Was the Cracker Jack guy in our aisle has been there since like 1959.
1982. Now, yeah. Now you also grew up in California, right?
I did. I'm from the Valley.
Now, what's it like to... Now, I have these ideas from, like, film and television of what it's like to grow up in California, or what it's like to be a kid here. Now, what... You have two sisters, right?
I have two younger sisters.
Are you competitive with these sisters?
No.
Just complete harmony.
Yeah, I just... My... Rachel is my middle sister, and Molly is my youngest, and we're all, I guess, 3.5 years
apart. You're the oldest, right?
I'm the oldest, and I just was so, Rachel was born, and it was like I had a daughter or something.
Wow.
My little, yeah. So it wasn't that antagonistic, you know.
Did she come to you for advice?
Sure, yeah. She's pregnant.
Oh. Did she ask you before she got pregnant if I should do this?
Yeah, she comes to me for, she's first in that department, so.
No, okay, so growing up in California, where do the kids go? Do they go to the hop? What do? They go to the roller rink?
Oh, yeah, we went to the roller rink, you know, birthday parties. I actually...
So it's just like a Beach Boys song?
It's, my God, it's better. It's so much better.
Really?
Because, let's see, I actually was just watching some home movies, and the birthday parties in the Valley, I mean, they're elaborate. They were usually like at a gym or a Chuck E. Cheese or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and the theatrics, everything's very, there's singing and there's dancing and there's like somersaults.
Somersaults?
Yeah.
Can you do a somersault?
Yeah.
Could you?
Yes.
All right, now, where did the bad kids go, though?
Yeah. There were a couple bad kids at my school.
Did you guys sneak down to the reservoir?
They got kicked out.
But where did they go after they got kicked out?
Like, oh, yeah.
Like,
where did they go in the neighborhood?
Yeah, like, what did they do?
There was a place called Suicide Hill.
Oh, every town has a Suicide Hill.
Yeah.
Okay.
Continue. It was close to my house.
Yeah.
And we would ride bikes down there, skateboard.
So why was it called Suicide Hill?
We at night we would go break into this, house that had it was like a trampoline, but it was not an above ground. It was built into the foundation of like
so we're talking about a trampoline. We're talking about a trampoline built into the foundation of an old rickety mansion.
Yes. Yes.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the great opening to a scary story.
Yeah. No one ever. You know what? Like, all the haunted stories of kids disappearing happen there.
Yeah.
There was only one.
Now you know what time. You know what time of the year it is, right?
Go Dodgers.
Halloween.
Right.
Right?
Sure.
Now, do you believe in any supernatural stuff?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
You do?
Of course.
Like what? Do you believe in ghosts?
Of course.
Demons?
I've seen many ghosts. Yes. I mean, they live inside of us, you know. I mean, I know plenty of demons.
Now, you are Jewish, am I correct?
Yes.
Now, in the Talmud, they talk about demons a little bit in that.
Do they?
They do, and they say, if one wants to discover them, let them take sifted ashes and sprinkle around his bed, and in the morning he will see something like the footprints of a cock.
Say it again? What's the last part?
In the morning he will see something like the footprints of a cock, like a chicken. So they're saying that demons are all around us.
Well,
do you believe in things like that?
The spirit realm is all, yes. So yes. I mean, a demon is just like a pain body that a spirit, where a spirit once was.
But in Kabbalistic mythology, a demon is formed from many different things. The part of the whole mythology is that when sort of the cycle of nature is broken. You know, there's like a natural order of things. And it's all about energy, you know. And energy comes down from heaven or whatever, and then it's recycled back to heaven. And when that chain is broken, then demons are formed. Energy falls into a sort of a shadow realm, you know. They actually think that demons are formed sometimes for men inappropriately spilling their seed. Hmm. Because, you know, that's energy that's going to the wrong place. Down the tub.
Sure. So it's like an energy that starts to eat at itself, or sort of becomes.
Or it's like breaking off from that
but
trajectory
it's
that we.
Natural order.
that natural
that
order.
About.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
And then, so, but then we coexist with, so, but are you saying, like, is there a haunting of, like, are people walking around, like, friends of ours who are haunted by these demons, or just that they exist sort of the way that, like, people talk about ghosts?
I mean, I don't believe in any of this stuff. But I kind of like the idea of it, though. It's just, I mean, it pretty much it's just saying there's a natural order, and when we sort of break the laws of nature,
yeah,
then bad things happen. This makes total sense. There's just a harmony.
Or something happens.
There's a harmony on the planet. There's a harmony.
Because it's like that's a moralizing sort of way to think about, you know.
Sure,
like, or
sure.
Or even the idea of a natural order, you know, that there's this like that would be even a harmony. I mean, it could.
Yeah,
be like,
and also in this sort of like ancient way of thinking, they didn't understand that like animals can go extinct. Like, that was a sort of, like, Darwinian. Or when they actually found, like, certain creatures like dinosaurs, that's when they realized, like, oh, there are creatures that lived that no longer live now, you know? And so this idea of, like, actually the history of Earth and the history of our universe being chaos and being destruction, and sort of this idea of when you break the natural order or something destructive happens, thinking of that as something unnatural, which is the way these people, you know, sort of ancient wise men
in the Kabbalah.
In the Kabbalah.
Yeah, the Kabbalistic tradition.
Yeah.
What is it's not the Talmud, but the Kabbalistic, they follow a different book.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. The text is lost on me right now. But
I haven't studied any of the Kabbalah. I mean, I did go to Jewish school up until, actually on the way back, I just was driving back from the Inland Empire and I passed my high school, which was on the campus of Cal State LA.
Yeah.
And I don't know what my train of thought was there, but anyhow.
All right, well, I got a little story for you. So you're a painter.
I do think, like, as a painter, I find it, like, I think that it's that exact overflow, or that like the absolute. I feel quite absolute, quite sure that, you know, that my like the interaction that my human form can have with anything in the quote unquote natural world. That there's this massive kind of endless like spillage,
right.
That is what I'm trying to like somehow pick up and organize.
Sure,
because it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't belong in my personal.
This is you getting out of balance, right?
This is me, like, this is a sort of, I think that sort of build up of, like, experience that doesn't fit in any kind of a trajectory personally or in a larger sense is, like, a sort of reason to paint or a reason to make art in general.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
It could have been anything. I mean, I think when I first, you know, when I found painting, it was kind of like a ASMR or something like ASMR that people do, where it was kind of like a.
It seemed therapeutic in some way.
Very therapeutic. Very like I could really like go into this channel and like, you know, the static just kind of.
Why do you think that is?
I think it was probably the age.
I'm saying more. Do you still get that sort of sensation from painting? Does it feel therapeutic? Does it help you? Let's say if you don't paint, does there feel like there's a void or there's like an anxiousness?
Well, it's that overflow of experience of like not having a channel to plug
sure.
these thoughts into, because really painting is a space of thought, you know? I mean,
yeah.
It's like it's a way of thinking that then finds a visual form, but it's really like it's thoughts.
Sure.
So if I'm not painting, then I'm like, yeah, like I don't, it does actually build up kind of in a way.
Right, right.
Similar to like an anxiety, but it's more like there's no, you know, like I have nowhere to put this.
Yeah, no, I feel similar ways about it as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a certain way of thinking about like oneself and one's issues since moving to California that I've become very aware of. you know, there's a certain attention to one's, like, sort of, like, well-being that people are focusing on all the time. What is it about California? What? Because, honestly, people have been coming to California for hundreds of years to heal themselves. They've been sick, you know. Yeah. This is the haven of, like, cults and New Age thinking. And not just after the 60s too. Like, there was an article in Time magazine in the 30s that talked about like the way cults are formed, and mostly just formed from like troubled times too. But they also come from like wealth, from excess, and this article in Time magazine, this is from 1929, I believe. As always in such troubled time, there is a flourishing of cults of religious novelties and new fashions and faith. Flowery, sun-drenched California, where nature exhibits herself in mystical opulence, where plenty of people have plenty of money, where there are many invalids contemplating eternity, is particularly propitious for this flourishing.
Wow. Yeah, there is a mystical opulence, I think. I mean, it's kind of a... what some kind of dualistic or, I mean, obviously, I think it's larger than just two things, but it's strange to, like, have all of the, you know, the health industry and this kind of, just, like, the lifestyle that goes with juices and yoga and, like, kind of transcending.
Do you think it's also...
TM, but then there's also, like, plastic surgery, and so it's this like, it's the spiritual wanting to transcend, but also wanting to transcend age.
I mean, you do think that there is something to do. I think aesthetics really matter.
To an edge.
Yeah. Huh.
Like, there's just, it's like, LA is really far from even. And maybe, I mean, actually, but, you know, people go to San Francisco, it still has a, feels like European or like New York.
Right. And also, at certain times in the history of California, when some of these sort of like New Age ideas were getting really entrenched, California was actually very far away from modern medicine. Actually, a lot of the medicine that people had access to was Chinese healers, you know, and East Asian people that were doing like ancient medicine.
Like, what era are you talking about?
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
LA
era.
LA and San Francisco.
Yeah.
And so actually there was a time when sort of you can fill a void here, I think, because people are really hungry for something.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think they know what it is. I mean, Pentecostalism, you know, that was born in downtown LA in 1906.
I didn't know that.
And just tons of things. Now, in the up to like World War II, there were tons of cults that were doing really well here, and they were like love cults and alien cults and really any type of cult you can imagine. And then after World War II, there was a sort of split, and the split was quote unquote scientific religions that were based around things like psychology or psychiatry. And the other thing would be more like hippie commune lifestyles.
Right. Yeah.
And that's when things sort of like filtered in and filtered down to more specific. That's when sort of the flourishing stopped and certain things like Scientology took a stronghold, you know.
Uh-huh. And what about, you know, what am I thinking? The People's Temple.
The People's Temple?
Yeah, that's the Jim Jones.
Sure.
You know, it's
he moved everyone to what? To like, to where did he move?
Ghana.
No, not Ghana.
Guyana.
What, the Jonestown? I thought that was in Central America. Well, either way, the result was exactly the same. I think that, also, now, what do you think of Cafe Gratitude? Do you think that's
you
a cult?
Was started by the Landmark.
I know. What do you know about Landmark?
Not very much. You know, it's kind of like Scientology light.
Yeah, it's a personal betterment program. That's how it describes itself.
Based on industriousness and entrepreneurship.
Now, actually, Cafe Gratitude had to leave Northern California because they were wrapped up in so many lawsuits. Because their employees, especially their managerial staff, was strongly encouraged, like strong-armed,
yeah,
into attending tons of landmark teachings.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Because that's, you know, and I think it's very kind of, they want a big group. I think if you were involved in a company that was started, I mean, it's like, it would be opposing of, like, the tenets of what got it started. It would be like,
yeah,
why wouldn't you?
Yeah, of course.
How couldn't you?
Yeah, of course, of course. Now, do you have any, you grew up here. Did you see any of these cults? I mean, Scientology is probably a big one.
I was completely unaware. I mean, I went to Jewish school. Most of the people I knew were Jewish.
Yeah.
Pretty much, like, up until, I don't know, 10th grade.
Yeah.
when all of a sudden, I was, like, the first Jewish person that a lot of my friends had met.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they were all from, like, Pasadena and Sierra Madre.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So exotic to meet a Jewish person.
It was very, very exotic and very, very Gentile.
So you missed all that stuff. Now, what do you think about? I sort of feel that the tech world, is sort of moving into this sort of
the culty,
like cult light.
Well, it uses that's the same branding and marketing strategies, and
yeah,
kind of like, I mean, but it doesn't a lot of the corporate world. When you said,
yeah, but I think that. I think the difference is with tech is that I think the people that work for these companies are true believers. And for a long time, you would work in the corporate world. Look, you had a job. You had a job for Pepsi.
Yeah.
And you might drink Pepsi, and you might like Pepsi, and you might get a free shipment of Pepsi once a month or something like that. And you might enjoy it, and you might give it to your kids. But you don't believe that Pepsi is going to save the world, you know. And I believe that a lot of tech companies, I believe that a lot of these new startups, they really do think that that's a possibility, right?
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think that's sort of the... Does that seem scary at all to you?
I mean, let's talk about something, what specifically, like, we're talking about, like... I mean, I don't think Mark Zuckerberg thought that. I think he was just,
no,
like,
definitely not.
You know, but these, like, the connect, like, maybe, and Uber certainly didn't think that.
But I think when Mark Zuckerberg would create something,
maybe
like
Airbnb. I bet the Airbnb guys, actually one of them.
They do.
But they definitely think
that. Well, they also get the people that use Airbnb, the sort of hosts or whatever.
Yeah.
They get those people to, like, lobby, to change zoning codes. And they get them active and, like, politically active in the community. Like, that's a culture, you
yes.
know? Yeah.
I feel I have very complicated feelings about Airbnb.
How do you feel about Airbnb?
I think it's like, I mean, I was traveling this summer, and so I stayed in Airbnbs, and it's like I got the sense that people who actually lived in these cities wouldn't have been able to like live in these apartments. Like, they're sort of kept in. It's like this transient economy that caters very much to people coming in with, like, foreign money.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah.
And so that's very problematic.
Yeah. I mean, I probably have mixed feelings about it as well. I just know that certain people, for whatever circumstances they're in, they wouldn't be able to live in their home unless they had the income of being a host on Airbnb.
Right.
That doesn't make it good or bad, or that's not like a moral statement.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess that's what it's more complicated than just, you know, people buying up a bill, or, you know, the, like, Chinese or French investors that
yeah.
come to LA and just buy land, and no one lives there.
Right.
You know, so it's just this kind of, I mean, the Orsini is similar to that.
Love the Orsini.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the Orsini, right? And your connection to the Orsini.
Well, no personal connection other than, you know, I drive by it every day on my commute. It became a really, like, it's an eyesore of a building that's this kind of, like, faux Mediterranean.
Yeah.
You know, and they have they're named, it's called the Renaissance Collection. They're named after a woman.
Village. Yeah, the Renaissance Collection. I love that.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are these, like, eyesores right off the freeway with this, like, these, you know, balconies that you could, you could, they're right off, like, on top of freeway signs.
Beautiful.
The light from the signs are just, it's just, like, you know,
yeah,
shining right in to people's bedrooms.
Yeah.
And, but what was the track I was talking about with, oh, like, stucco?
We were talking about, we were talking about Airbnb. We're talking about
Airbnb. Okay, so this idea of, like,
investors.
Investments and also, like, advertise, like, you know, architecture being, or, like, a sort of advertisement for a city. And then the idea if you take that to, like, with this new economy of, like, transactional, you could live here if you were. Wouldn't this be nice? It's like a park.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're in that home. You're playing Disneyland. You know what I mean?
Like this is,
you know, you're not just in a hotel. People don't feel a connection to a hotel, you know, in the same way. Unless, you know, there's a separation. There's a separation with a hotel. But in an Airbnb, that's the whole appeal, is that what if this was me? What if I lived on this house in Echo Park? Or Silver Lake, and I could walk down to the hippest coffee shop in town, you know, because I live in I live in Oklahoma, and it's not very
really
glamorous.
Like, there's a moon juice.
Oh yeah, no. You've never heard of moon juice before, but now it's your favorite thing, and now you just subscribe to a monthly shipment. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all very. That was all very. I mean, all that stuff is really interesting to me as a sort of like. What architecture in this, like, you know, hyper-capitalist system world that we're living in.
Right, right.
That, like, something that austere and, like, ill-fitting to its surroundings and completely out of context can be this, like, physical manifestation of capital.
Yeah, sure, sure, sure. I also know you did a series of paintings about the Orsini, right?
I did. I kind of presented them as this theatrical backdrop.
Yeah.
It led me down some interesting paintings.
Yeah, I agree. I really love those paintings.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah. I feel like you latched onto it as just sort of like a, as a template for thinking about sort of like fantasy.
And I think there was something uniquely kind of, LA about them, despite being so ill-suited, completely fucked. I think that, you know, just the stucco, like the aesthetic of them, works here because of this sort of like vast sprawl.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of, who's this? Is it Philip Johnson, the postmodern architect, where he'd like. Design, you know, a kind of modernist Bauhaus structure directly next to this sort of like really elaborate, you know, like a building that looks like it has a little mustache on top.
Yeah.
It's all about the curves and what it is. It's about the, word that I hate, juxtaposition, you know, or putting two things next to each other.
Yeah, the juxtaposition.
They're just next to each other.
Yeah.
Let's just say next to.
Yeah, next to.
Yeah, next to is powerful, like putting something next to another thing.
Sure. No, I also think that Orsini series you did, that seemed to me like you're tapping into some idea of like reality merging into some like fantasy. And I know you're a big fan of Odilon Redon, right?
I think we're both fans of him.
No, we definitely are. But I'm the host of the show, so I can phrase it however I want. But I think that's where his work is most successful too. I feel like when he do you think his work? I think it's completely and intentionally ambiguous. I don't think there's much to pull out. But it plays completely just with ideas of opulence, with ideas of fantasy, with ideas of just sort of like symbolic gestures that make you feel. I don't know, in a very, like, flowery...
Yeah, the sense of a place, or this kind of, like, an atmosphere that is so kind of haunted. I think his stuff has this kind of like a weight of spirits. It's kind of this mixing of the spiritual realm, I guess, if it did was going to have a weight, or it doesn't have a it doesn't have a gravity, it doesn't have a weight. There's a lightness of being.
Yeah.
But then to have a haunting to these kind of the way he would use architect kind of these Corinthian columns, or there was these framing devices he was using that are quite like classical.
Yeah.
So it was the tension there, I think.
Also, his early work was much darker. He would do these series that when he was young called noirs. You know, they were mostly just black, black and white. Then his work really opened up, and I think he actually said this later in life. His work just became about the triumph of light over darkness, and that's just I think he was a very positive guy.
Do you think about, people always talk about Vuillard and Bonnard together.
Yeah.
And Bonnard is like the painter of light, and Vuillard
is what? The painter of?
I wouldn't say darkness, but it's certainly like a low light interior.
There's a melancholy.
Like a melancholy.
Yeah.
And I think that I prefer Vuillard for that reason, because I think that the light was he would like do things to adjust it, like he would put a fabric over a lamp and it would become this kind of glowy red or something like that, or like there was kind of an artifice and a theater to the setup.
Yeah.
I feel like Bonnard was really like mesmerized by the actual the daylight coming through
lines
into a bathtub, like he's trying to sort of, and I don't know, I've often, like, in my mind, I'm like, what would I compare? Is there, like, a musical analogy or something like this? And I think, like, Bob Dylan versus Bruce Springsteen.
Hmm. Now, what's the difference? I don't know the difference between the two.
So, like, Bernard would be Bruce, and Vuillard is Bob Dylan.
Yeah, huh. Interesting. Vuillard is Bob Dylan.
So, I guess Bob Dylan changed his name. Bob Dylan wrote songs that, like, with, very heavy symbolisms and self-mythologizing, and kind of this, like, obscuring or this elusivity to the stories, right?
Yeah.
And there's a kind of, like, a folk tale, where it's, you're pointing at, you're
this sound, this really sounds like the movie I'm Not There.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Well, don't see it. It's terrible. Okay. But now, what's next for you in your painting? Are you going to self-mythologize?
It's interesting that you're saying. I feel like this show has led me to believe that I want, how you were just saying, purposefully obscure.
Is that intentionally. Sure.
Intentionally obscure. I think that for me, this body of work was really like going heavily naming.
Yeah.
Like that I could, it was a very vulnerable place to go. Like that I would even say, this is specifically the Orsini. This is specifically a Nietzsche book. Whatever, like naming the thing. But what I found is that it kind of actually becomes much more like.
It's helpful. It's a tool.
But I think I would paint myself into a corner a lot of the time by refusing to name like the location or like the sort of who is it that I'm thinking of. It helps me to kind of have these more specific.
Right. Now, I actually think I actually really like your oil pastels, the ones I was seeing online.
Thank you. Yeah, I think you were saying what's next. I mean, next is a kind of like meta. I don't know. We'll see what happens, but there's a project. There's a collaborative photo project.
I hear this a lot. People talk about this sort of like the job of the artist, the role of the artist. Do you think there is a role in America in 2017? Do you think an artist, a painter, has any specific role for the culture? Or is that just completely a romantic notion?
I wouldn't say the painter specifically, but I mean, I think we do have a yeah, that we do have a very important role. I mean, we have to shine lights in like ways that they're not that no one is looking. You know?
But don't you think there are other mediums that do that so much more successfully?
Like
YouTube.
Like YouTube.
Like film.
Film does it. I mean, film is magic, too.
Yeah.
You know, with the benefit of a lot of time or like.
But is painting completely antiquated? And the idea of being a painter and who's going to see your paintings, it's not what it was. It's not like Jacques-Louis David sort of inspiring the French Revolution. It's not going to work like that anymore.
Right. Is there a political resistance?
Or is just painting, it just doesn't have the weight that it does. And can artists accept that role? And can artists understand that maybe as a painter, you're like a cobbler or something, and you make these things that people use and love and enjoy, mm-hmm. and they're functional, and they don't have this sort of the elevated status they have in society is maybe manufactured by some sort of like
or maybe like the infrastructure is no longer like tenable,
right?
But I mean, it does feel a lot like a scaffold, like. Now, I mean, I do have great expectations, I guess I would say.
You do?
Yeah. I mean, in making, I wouldn't be able to make my work unless I felt like there was a fire to start, you know?
So you're romantic in that sense? Like, you think there is something to inspire in others?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the same way that poetry, which also also, like, are people reading? Are people still writing?
No, do you know
about? Maybe that's really a radical thing.
No, I mean, Instagram poetry is huge. It's a huge industry.
Right. So, but is Instagram? I mean, do we talk about painting the same way, where it's like?
Right.
Right.
Maybe. You know.
Instagram painting.
They're just images, aren't they? After all.
Yeah, but painting really needs to be seen in person, and it is true that. Most of the time, that's not the case.
Right.
I mean, most people aren't going to make it to the gallery.
That is
during
true.
The month that the show is up.
Yeah.
But my show is extended till November 4th.
Yeah, great little plug. yeah. So. All right, well, we got about 10 minutes left. I want to tell you a spooky little story because it's that time of month.
Oh, it's time for ghost stories for sure.
Now, you're an artist. A painter, right?
Right.
Now, this is the story of actually a haunted painting.
Ooh.
Now, in 1972, a guy named William Stoneham, who's lived in California, had a contract with a gallery owner, and he had to produce two paintings a month for $200 each. Slim.
For how long?
Slim pickings. So he had this deadline drawing close, and he looked at a photograph that his parents had taken of him when he was a kid. And in the picture, it's him standing there next to, and this is the photograph, him standing there, and then a young girl from the neighborhood is standing right next to him. And he turned it into a painting where the girl is transformed into a sort of lifeless doll, and behind him there are two hands that are coming through a glass window, and all you see are the hands through darkness. The name of the painting, which is based on a poem by his wife, is called Hands Resist Him. I think that's a great title of a painting, right?
Hands Resist Him.
Hands Resist Him. Yeah. Now, what happened was the painting was purchased actually by the guy who plays the producer in The Godfather, the guy that has his head on his bed. Okay, so you've never seen The Godfather before, but in the movie, there's whatever his name is, Corleone is.
I feel very outed, right?
Is trying to send a message, and so he kills this Hollywood producer's prized horse, and he leaves the head in his bed. So when the guy wakes up the next day, he'll see this. Shocking! Now,
it also reminds me of the Maurizio Catalan sculpture. That's just the headless horse coming out of a wall.
Oh, sure. Now don't derail me here.
Okay.
Now, in 1978, that producer, that actor, he died. Okay?
Okay.
Could have something to do with his painting.
Okay.
Possibly. And then there was an eBay listing of the painting in 2000. And the description read like this. When we received this painting, we thought it was really good art. The children in the picture, and then they said, one night, my son was looking at the painting, and it was dark in his room, and he said the children in the painting were fighting, and coming into the room, in the middle of the night. And the 4-year-old daughter had seen this, and the maybe 10-year-old son. And then they set up a motion sensor camera in the room for 3 nights.
For the record.
And it purportedly captured the boy in the picture exiting the painting under threat, is the way they describe it. Warning, do not bid on this painting if you are susceptible to stress-related disease, faint of heart, or are unfamiliar with supernatural events. If you're unfamiliar with supernatural events, you definitely don't want this painting.
You don't want, but even if you are, you know.
If you're totally familiar, yeah, if you've seen all the haunted.
Seen all the paranormal activity.
Yeah, exactly. This painting may or may not possess supernatural powers that could impact or change your life. This is all in this description. Now, these people responded very strongly. You know, some of the people on eBay.
I can imagine.
It got so many views, all this stuff, and people have also offered the owner of the.
They still own it?
Actually, the artist bought the painting back. He said it's too powerful for anybody else to own.
Oh, wow. This is kind of reminding me of, what was this? You know, the final Freddy movie.
Freddy versus Jason?
No, I think it was, it was after that.
There was nothing after that.
Okay, Freddy was definitely in it. I just watched it. It's like called A New Nightmare.
Yeah, that's called Wes Craven's Nightmare.
Okay,
and that's from the.
Freddy in that?
Freddy's definitely in that, but it's a meta depiction of Freddy.
Yes.
You know?
But you know how the director loses control of his subject.
Very pure meta. You know? And
I feel like that's what's happening in the painting.
Exactly. Well, and then also, the artist also said, I can't imagine Jim Stoneham is making too much money. This artist, his paintings don't look particularly good. So he said somebody offered him something in the low 6 figures.
I was going to ask, what was the amount?
For the painting. And he said no.
He said no.
And he's shown it in gallery exhibitions 3 times in his life. And he doesn't want to show it very often.
Does he? Right, right. No, it's too powerful.
It's too powerful. Now, if you were to make a painting like this, a haunted painting.
Oh, my God.
What would you do with it? Would you destroy it?
Lord.
Would you destroy it? Now, do you believe that a painting could be possessed by a spirit? Could be tapped into the netherworld. Is that even possible in your mind?
Absolutely.
Wow. Now, how does that work?
Yeah, I don't know the workings of it all. I mean, can it happen?
You don't know the workings of the netherworld?
Right. I know that, you know, if the conditions are set and if a ghost were to appear where a painting was being made and had some kind of response.
What do you mean response?
If it had it.
Like it really liked the painting when they saw it. Oh my gosh. A masterpiece.
Or like what if like I walked in to one of the haunted restrooms at my studio and the water is still running.
Yeah.
And what if so that the ghost
erupted. Yeah. And then you fill up your jar of water that you're gonna drink with the running faucet and then that water's haunted. So you're drinking that haunted water, so therefore the gestures you make on your painting.
The water's haunted, but I'm saying, like, what if there is some kind of transference? Like, you'd have to interact in some way. You know,
if this got a little ectoplasm. So if your painting got a little ectoplasm on it, okay?
Yeah.
And it somehow had some sort of sentience, right?
Yeah.
It had a spirit, right? Now, what would you do with that?
I would burn it.
You would destroy it. You wouldn't.
I would burn it, and I would ask 3 trusted. I would want witnesses.
3 trusted allies.
Yes, and I would, yeah, I want 3 trusted. I would need allies. I would need. What would I would have them bring some, you know, sacrificial
lamb.
No, No, not an animal. I wouldn't. Of course, I wouldn't want to hurt an animal.
No, no. Okay, so you have a haunted painting, and you're going to sacrifice something to destroy it. You're going to create more ripple effects through the netherworld. That's going to leave you more haunted.
I never said I would sacrifice a lamb.
You said you need something sacrificial.
Yeah, I would need there. It would be like burn an effigy, and I would.
It sounds like witchcraft to me.
Yeah, it would be a bit of that. A bit of witchcraft.
You wouldn't try to make some posts online and then try to make a lot of money?
Oh, yeah. No, I would start a more popular, more interesting, haunted
hayride.
I would take it to the Queen Mary and have it, like, as a expose. I would have it in a haunted house room as part of Dark Harbor.
You can do better than Dark Harbor.
I can. I mean, it would be like on the Queen Mary, separate from Dark Harbor. I'm saying I want to be in competition.
Yeah, well, I think you need to team up with Dark Harbor.
Oh, so now I need to go back. I thought you were saying the opposite.
I'm just thinking you can do better than Dark Harbor. I just think don't be in competition. Just either work with them or just go to a better haunted place.
What's the most haunted place in America?
No, you probably take it to the Tower of London.
Okay.
You know?
I have to go
to London. You have to go to London.
I don't like to fly on planes.
Don't worry, the painting's flying solo.
I'll just send it there.
Yeah.
Banish it to.
Banish it to the Tower of Terror. Yeah. What are you gonna be for Halloween this year?
I was thinking about Chucky.
Huh.
Or Jason.
Now Chucky is exactly what we're talking about here. Chucky is a doll, an inanimate object,
right,
imbued with supernatural stuff,
mm-hmm,
juice,
mm-hmm,
spirit.
The juice of the juice.
The juice of a serial killer. His name is Charles something. It's just very convenient that Charles was the serial killer, and then the boys. Oh, actually, it's all Chucky. Yeah, yeah.
It's all Chucky.
It's all Chucky.
What do you think? What's better, Chucky or Jason?
What's better? I hate Jason.
So Chucky.
Jason's like having it's like a mummy with a machete. It's useless.
Yeah.
He's a strong man.
Yeah, he's a strong man. I just wanted to get the mask.
Michael Myers, Jason, useless.
I have a good idea for a friend of mine. I want her to be Mickey Michael, which is like Michael Jackson mixed with Mickey Mouse.
I thought you were gonna say Mickey Mouse mixed with Michael Myers.
Michael Myers. Yeah. Ooh, which character though?
Which character?
Like Wayne?
No, Michael. No, not Mike Myers. Michael Myers from the Halloween movies. Do you know who that is?
I just saw Halloween for the first time. Which one is he?
He's the bad guy.
Oh, he's very scary.
You know, he's. Do you know what that mask is? Do you know? I mean, you probably don't know what the mask is.
Oh, the. Right.
But the mask he wears?
Yeah, no, I don't.
That's actually a William Shatner mask.
Really?
Spray painted white.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. A little bit of Halloween trivia.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, we're going to play a little game here. Okay? This is a game Eugene likes to play.
Wow, wow, wow.
All right, pick a number. 7, 9, or 12?
9.
All right. 9 years from now, I want you to describe the spookiest day you can imagine.
Ooh. God. 9 years from now.
Yeah. Or, yeah.
Jeez. Well.
The worst day you can imagine. This is a Halloween edition. Usually he always says, "I want you to describe your best, perfect day." I'm saying this is Halloween, baby. We're switching it up.
Well, it would obviously be that I went out for a swim in, like,
the ocean.
The ocean. That was the last that you saw of me.
So just death?
Yeah.
Huh, okay. It's pretty simple.
Simplistic.
There'd be no torture first or anything like that, any suffering?
God. Well, no one would know what happened. It would just have to be, I mean, it would have to be, they would reveal
it has
the layers.
Okay, it has nothing to do with other people. This is just you, this is you, for your experience alone.
No, but But let's just say I am writing it from the point of walking into the ocean. And then people have to go and find out, you know, what had happened earlier that day.
Yeah, why are these fingers washing up on the shore?
Right.
Yeah.
And then they find the knife. It's like a very slow
They find the knife? Hold on, you were stabbed to death in the ocean?
No, it was before.
What?
Someone maybe thought that they saw me walking out there.
This has so many twists and turns. Oh my gosh, tell me more. So who did it?
That's the question. It wasn't even me that was walking into the ocean. It was actually the person dropping off the dismembered parts.
So where are you?
Well, I'm in pieces.
Interesting.
I mean, that's pretty spooky, right? I'm creeping myself out.
Pretty spooky. You're shaking over here.
I hate it.
Now
I feel like I've put some kind of hex on myself.
All right, Jessica. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. And if you want to plug it one more time, why don't you tell people where they can see your paintings right now?
You can see my work up at Sade Gallery in Lincoln Heights through November 4th.
Very cool.
Fire season.
All right. Well, this is Andy Faulkner, and this was Open Up and Bleed. Thank you all for listening.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
Of course.